to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everybody, to yet another live installment of the award-winning political cesspool radio program. It's Saturday night, August 13th. Hot August night, as Neil Diamond might sing, and here we are at AM 1380 WLRM Radio in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, overlooking majestic Bill Street. I was going to say Bill Street Boulevard, but no, that's it. It's just Bill Street. Lots of bars, FedEx Forum. You know where Keith's going to be at 7 o'clock. You know, he's only with me for an hour each night. I pull 3 hours worth of duty. Keith does 1 hour, and then he goes down there and, you know, he hits up one of his favorite watering holes, and that's I meet him up at 9 o'clock, you know, and have a, you know, by then he's well and lit, but that's just a joke, everybody. Anyway, folks, listen, here we are again, going out to the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online and around the world to our legion of fans at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. I'll tell you, I kind of hated for the show to begin when it did tonight. Of course, you know, we're here every Saturday night at 6 o'clock. That's the one thing in life you can bet on. The one thing in life you can count on. Besides the sun rising in the east and setting in the west, is that we will be here for you with a live show every Saturday night. Once again, here we are. No matter what we're doing, we're going to be here at 6. And as I said a couple of minutes ago, well, really for about the last hour, Keith and I were in the lobby here at the radio station, and we were watching King Kong, and it wasn't quite over yet. They were just about to capture Kong when we had to come in here and start the show. And we weren't watching the classic King Kong, mind you. We were watching the 2005, you know, King Kong Revisited with Naomi Watts and Jack Black, and computer animation and all that good stuff. But I'll tell you, Keith, the carnage that King Kong was putting on Skull Island didn't have anything to the carnage that London, England saw this week, and it didn't even take an overgrown gorilla to do it.
Well, to tell you the truth, I looked out the window, and they were capturing some King Kong lookalike out there on Beale Street, and quite frankly, that was better action than what was on the movie screen. But what's happening in England right now is really, you know, something that we want to get into in some depth, because this is, you know, we hate to say we told you so, but we told you so. And as James says, you can't have a first world nation with a third world population. And when you start getting a third world population, even a third world population as small as that third world population is in Great Britain right now, it starts having an effect. It has such an effect that now the biggest news out of England in the past year are these race riots. And of course, all the mainstream people want to tell you that it's Muslims that are rioting, or that it is disaffected youth or something. They will do everything they can to avoid telling you the truth, which is that the rioters are predominantly black, James.
Well, they are. And I guess we don't really need to open up this story with a preface. You know what's going on in London. It's been going on for so long. Keith, this started right after our show last week, and it's still going on, although much of it has been dissipated. But yes, Keith is right. Let's just be honest. Let's be frank. Let's tell the truth, and hopefully it'll set us free. An army of black thugs is burning down London. You know, that's what they've been doing over the course of the past week, at least. Burning down buildings, beating white pedestrians, making them strip down naked in the streets. They have injured countless police officers, put several in the hospital. They're torching police cars, double-decker buses, looting stores, burning down landmarks, beating photographers and journalists who are trying to capture some of this on film. They even went into a McDonald's and started cooking their own food. This is, you've read everything. Now you've seen it all. Now they got so hungry, all this, you know, activity was, you know, taking it out of them. So they, you know, stormed a McDonald's and just started, you know, ran the employees out and started cooking their own food. And as I said once, Keith, during an interview on CNN, as we say quite often here on the show, you can have a first world nation, but you can't have a first world nation with a third world population. Crime and violence follows these people wherever they go. No amount of white guilt is ever going to change that. Now, we've got videos on the politicalcesspool.org. You can see video and pictures of this carnage that's been left in the wake of this manifestation of multiculturalism.
Well, we've also mentioned that the big question is, how do these third worlders get into first world nations? Well, they always get into first world nations because of liberals. Liberals that come in two contingents. The smaller contingent, it's like, you know, the Illuminati in the Masons or something. These are the people that are really in the know. They know what they're doing. They're doing this for a purpose. They're doing it for the same purpose that Bertolt Brecht, the German communist playwright, said in the late 1940s. He said, if you don't like the results of the election, change the electorate. That's what they're doing by letting these third worlders into America, into Europe, into Great Britain, into Australia. They're doing this because they know that once people actually see liberalism in action, that they'll wake up and say, man, how did I ever get that idea? That was the craziest thing in the world. You know, let's stop it. Let's reverse course. Let's go back to conservatism. They don't want you to have that option any longer. They want to flood the nation with third worlders, give them citizenship, and then they're here to stay. Now, that's not most liberals, though. Most liberals are what Vladimir Lenin termed useful idiots, people like the lady that we featured in our United in Prayer article, Nina Taylor, all of these, you know, for example, it was white women in America more than any other group that pushed Obama over the top and got him elected president. They are soft-hearted, and soft-heartedness leads to soft-headed decisions politically, like open borders, like voting for Obama, and, you know, all the other liberal nostrums that have been forced down the throat of right-thinking Americans. And all of these things are having the predictably bad, horrific results that we tell you about here on the Political Cesspool every week. But, you know, some people never learn, and we've got to keep driving home the point. But of course, what's happening in England is happening also. You know, it's exacerbated in England because they pussyfoot around with them. What they do is they have these bobbies who have this so-called proud tradition of not carrying firearms. Well, that's an invitation to go hog wild and pig crazy when you're dealing with minorities. If you don't have a firearm with, you know, like .44 caliber or above with real stopping power, they're not deterred in the least. If you think they're deterred by rubber bullets and billy clubs, you don't have any experience with them, James.
No, you don't, Keith. And listen up, everybody. We're going to come back after this first commercial break of the night. We are just getting started. A lot more forthcoming tonight. We're going to take you around the world and back again here on the Political Cesspool this evening. We're going to continue our coverage of the London riots. We're going to take a very good question from a loyal listener in Dallas, Texas, right after the flip side. But first, me and Keith are going to slip back into the lobby, try to get 3 more minutes of King Kong in before these commercials are over. We'll be back.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, kids. Welcome back. Class is in session. You know, school started back this week around the country, Keith. Still to this day, school is never out in recess here in the Political Cesspool. That's exactly right, Keith. I still get the chills. I still get anxious when I walk into Target or Walmart and I see a back-to-school section. It still just brings back horrors. And I have been out of school for a long, long time now. Not as long as you, Keith, mind you, but still a good, 13 years. I still hate this time of year. It's just nightmarish.
You know, there must be something perverse about a person that gets out of school and then wants to spend the rest of their working life in it being a teacher. You know, there's something about school, like you said, that just, you know, no red-blooded American kid likes going to school. And again, you know, it's the left that keeps incrementally extending the school year. I remember when I was a kid, you got out from Memorial Day to Labor Day. And now they're starting kids back to school almost on the 1st of August, and there's all this talk about year-round school, particularly for people in the ghettos. Yeah. See, it's nuts. And what they're, basically it's because the left doesn't want kids raised by their biological parents. They think they do a much better job. Now, nobody could do a much worse job than some of the underclass in a place like Memphis, but the only group that could do a worse job are the leftist bureaucrats running the schools.
We'll have to get Eddie the Bombardier Miller will be on during the night's third hour. We'll get him. It's back to school time. I'm sure he has some good stories about, you know, having bricks thrown at him and all that other stuff. You know, Eddie's like Tom Sawyer, you know, but it's true. You know, he has, you know, remember the time he told us a story about he hopped on a train and he wanted the deadhead to Alaska or something?
The thing about Eddie is he was Tom Sawyer during the Civil Rights Movement, and he was right there on the front lines, you know, while other more privileged white people were behind their gated communities or in their private schools. Eddie was out there on the front line duking it out with his new multicultural classmates.
Wasn't so much duking it out. He was dodging bullets and bricks, just trying to run for his life. But, you know, what else can you do? Anyway, we'll talk to Eddie in the third hour. I'm sure he'll have some good stories to share with you. Love that guy. That's why he's the Bombardier. All right, back to our coverage on the London thing. You know, a couple of days ago, back when these riots were only heading into their fourth consecutive day, we pulled a couple of good stories. American Renaissance had put together a collection or a compilation. Why did the police lose control? This is what happens when multiculturalists are in charge. Again, another story about how these black hooligans were forcing the white Britons to strip naked in the street, the looting and violence continuing on. We've got a collection of those stories there at thepoliticalcesspool.org for you. In the meantime, Keith, I don't want to chase this rabbit too far because, you know, we got to get to this great question from Gerald in Dallas, Texas. But a black journalist was interviewed on the BBC, which is like our, I guess, NPR/CNN hybrid. A black journalist, if you can call him that, went on television, and we've got the footage of this. If you go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, you can watch this interview in its entirety. A black journalist justified the actions of his kinsmen, saying that, you know, never mind the fact that blacks in England, just like here in America, commit a vastly disproportionate amount of the crime, violent crime in particular. So naturally, unless the liberals can stop it, they're going to get so-called, quote-unquote, racially profiled. What that means is you got an identifiable section of the population that is prone to violence. You kind of take a closer look at them, than you do other people. But if you show that common sense, you get in trouble. So anyway, a couple of people, a couple of bobbies that still have common sense in England, you know, do this from time to time. And so this, according to the black journalist, justified all of the rioting and violence, all of the destruction of property. Of course, if white countries are so intolerable, they could always go back to their nations of origin. You never hear that being said. But Keith, you know, again, the fact that anyone, you know, could justify this, well, the truth is stranger than fiction once again.
They're never going to face up to the fact that there is a reason why black America can't get off the mat, black Britain can't get off the mat or get off the canvas, and it has nothing to do with racism. They are, quite frankly, the most fortunate of their breed in order to be in a first world Western, predominantly white nation. As a result of that, they do better than anybody that's living in a majority black nation or a black-run nation. And we can see what that brings, you know, when you have a majority of blacks. Just look at Detroit, Michigan. Look at Haiti. Look at sub-Saharan Africa without white leadership. But these people insist that, you know, their blackness and their native propensities have nothing to do with the fact that they don't achieve like white people. Instead, it's always the result of racism. They keep bringing it on.
And all of this is coming to a diverse area near you. We've seen it, you know, this happened in Memphis. This has happened in Memphis before. It happens anywhere where you can enjoy the benefits of diversity. This is the benefit of diversity, folks. Carnage, rioting, looting, murder, the destruction, fire. Keith, here's a quick one. I always like to showcase the intelligence of our listening audience. We have an incredibly sophisticated listening audience out there who supports the show financially, who tunes into the show every week. Without you folks, we couldn't do it. This comes from our friend Gerald in Dallas, who is a faithful contributor and writer
and listener.
He writes this: I know you have a full plate to talk about on the cesspool tonight, but please discuss the disgusting refusal by the mainstream conservatives to acknowledge the racial aspects of the riots in Britain. Ann Coulter, and we're going to put a blog up about this on Monday, has been on television focusing on the whites who participated in the riots and denying that there is a racial component, even though blacks started the riots, 60 to 80% of the rioters are black. She was joined on Fox by Bill O'Reilly, who also said, it's not about race. The lickspittles at the National Review, claims to be America's premier conservative magazine, are also claiming it's not a racial thing, simply ignoring the facts, like the picture of the white Briton who was forced to strip off his clothes by one of the black rioters. The explanation for the riots, which all these so-called conservatives are giving, is that they're caused by socialism. They're caused by welfare policies, by an entitlement culture. That is, of course, partly true, Gerald writes. Britain is even more corroded by socialism, welfare, and the you owe me mentality than the USA. But if that is the main reason for the riots, then why aren't the Danes or the Swedes rioting? Their countries are even more socialistic and welfare-oriented than Britain, although both of those countries have large numbers of third world immigrants who may bring problems. They are largely Muslims who, as bad as they are not as savage and violent as your run-of-the-mill Africans. Britain tragically has large numbers of both types. Great observation, great question by Gerald. 1 minute left, Keith, in this segment. Why haven't the so-called mainstream conservatives like Ann Coulter, National Review, focused on the racial aspect of this, the elephant in the living room, like we do?
Well, National Review is a neocon Jewish-run outfit. They ran all the true conservatives out, and they are trying to set the standard and to stifle the voices of true conservatives. This is blue state conservatism. Ann Coulter is a blue stater. She may not be Jewish. People like Bill Kristol are Jewish and blue staters. You cannot get a straight answer out of them. You can't get any type of legitimate conservatism. They're here to undermine legitimate conservatism, to make it feckless, helpless, incapable of really resisting liberalism. That's what will happen. That's why, for example, I hear a lot of people saying bad things about Rick Perry. Well, Rick Perry's a red stater. And quite frankly, I'll take him over a Mitt Romney or a Michelle Bachmann, any of these blue state people. Look for the red state label, folks.
Sadly, Michelle Bachmann won the Iowa straw poll today in political news, beating Ron Paul. Perry, of course, wasn't in it yet because he just announced his candidacy today. Got to take a break. We'll be back.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I've been talking for the first half hour of tonight's program about the riots in London. We'll probably revisit that in the third hour. I'd like to get Eddie's take on that. You know, we've been talking about Eddie's take on it. He knows what's going on over there. Anyway, I got to tell y'all a quick story. Keith has found another example of modern day racism, or what isn't racism, as the case may be, what passes for racism. There you go. At a local farmer's market. Now, this is where basically local farmers, hence the name, bring their produce to sell at a market. I mean, my God, it makes sense, doesn't it? Anyway, there's racism afoot there at the farmer's market. But first, I got to tell you what I really hate. Before Keith tells you about the racism of the farmer's market, what I really hate, if there's one thing in life I really hate, has anyone noticed It's, yeah, it's vegetables. That's what it is. Because, well, Keith, tell them that story real quick, but don't go into this because I got to tell them another thing I really hate.
Okay, James would never be caught at any farmer's market. If he's there, you know that he is completely henpecked and being drugged there by his wife, because the only thing that he hates more than fruit are vegetables. A vegetable for James is like Ronald Reagan. It's ketchup and French fries, period. Nothing else would, you know, you've heard the old expression for the temperance people, you know, the people that wanted to do away with alcohol and supported prohibition, lips that touch liquor will never touch mine. Well, James will tell you that vegetables and fruit never touch his lips.
That's absolutely right. One of the jokes that Keith so often tells when we go out to eat during the week to plan the show is that, you know, I've never been hungry enough to eat a vegetable or some variation thereof. Keith actually ordered for me this week. I was running a little late, and he said, you know, he told the waiter to be sure that there wasn't a vegetable anywhere near my plate, you know, or that there was going to be hell to pay. So I do hate vegetables. But the other thing that I hate is, have you ever noticed, and I noticed it right now when we were in that last commercial break, you're watching TV, you know, Keith, me and you were watching King Kong a little bit earlier, and you're watching TV, and you're going along, you're listening to the show, and then it goes to commercial, and then they almost blow your ears out. They almost bust your eardrums. Commercials are so loud. Well, they're so much more loud. The volume is higher on commercials. I don't see how they do that. I don't see, you know, because I didn't push the volume to go up on my TV. All I'm saying is I'm here, I'm trying to do this radio show, a national syndicated radio show. We got to go out to the lobby. I'm going to let you talk about the farmer's market. I'm going to have to go in the lobby and turn down King Kong, because every time it goes on a commercial, it sounds like one of the receptionists up front's putting a bullhorn to the TV. You know, we got to do something about this. Has anybody ever noticed? Send me an email. Have you ever noticed that your TV gets louder when commercials are on? Let me know that I'm not crazy. Let me know that I'm not crazy. Somebody please tell me that you've noticed that too. Keith, have you?
Yeah, it's psychological conditioning. They know why they're doing the whole reason for the broadcast is to sell you something and to get you to buy something. That's their justification for taking the money. He's going to turn down the TV right now. But we were talking about why mainstream conservatives refuse to tell you the truth about the source of the rioting in Great Britain or in the United States or anywhere. Why they refuse to tell you the truth about what happens regarding violent crime in multicultural nations. The reason they do this is because they're blue staters, and blue staters are essentially liberal for the most part. Now, we have a lot of great listeners from blue state America who really belong in red state America, and we have some southerners and red state Americans that belong in blue state America, but basically there's a pretty clear demarcation line. It's the same demarcation line that has existed in American politics ever since the end of the era of good feelings in the 1820s. It's the same fissure that caused the Civil War, and it's still in existence today. Quite frankly, that's why I was saying right before the break, the primary thing that I look at when I look at presidential candidates, like Republican nominees for the presidency, the first thing I do is look to see where they're from. If they're from blue state America, they've got two strikes against them. If they're from red state America, I'm willing to listen. Now, there are some phony blue state, bogus red state Americans like Newt Gingrich, Mike Huckabee, people like that. But right now, I consider the two best candidates to be two red state Americans from the state of Texas, Ron Paul and Rick Perry. Now, I know that Rick Perry is a mainstream guy, that he's probably a member of the CFR, and he's been, you know, supporting the NAFTA highway and things like this. But believe me, it's just like, you know, I prefer Rush Limbaugh to Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity, even though I know that Rush Limbaugh isn't the real deal. It's so transparently clear that blue state so-called conservatives are basically frauds and phonies sent there like to provide red herrings for all of the conservative masses out here and to mislead you and to basically make you totally helpless and confused. Now, let's get back to some of these articles that we wanted to cover, like the fracas at the farmer's market in Memphis. We said in that article that if you want action-packed drama, raw emotion, and a the timeless conflict of good and evil and the affairs of mankind. Forget about the gunfight at OK Corral or even the Alamo or Thermopylae, you know, the 300 Spartans. We've got it here in Memphis as we speak at the fracas at the farmer's market. Now, this shows you what the mainstream media is doing. They're always trying to dredge up all these civil rights tinged articles or events to let people know that the civil rights movement is still needed, that white racism is just as virulent and pervasive as ever, and that we're going to have to, and this is the reason why black people in America can't seem to get off the mat financially or otherwise. It's not because of any inherent problems that they have or shortcomings. It is always white racism. Well, we focused on this article because the farmer's market where this so-called racism occurred, which basically was white vendors who didn't want to take federal vouchers for vegetables because the federal government has proven, one, to be slow pay, and two, not to pay 100 cents on the dollar on the vouchers. They're racist, trying to make the poor black people go to the back of the bus, figuratively speaking, at the farmer's market. They basically are being castigated and portrayed as racist because they prefer real money to monopoly money. Well, everybody does, and particularly people in the black community. In Memphis, they say money talks and BS walks and everything except cash money is BS. Now, that's fine for them, but when white people operate on the same principle, suddenly they're racist. Well, basically, these food vendors or these vegetable vendors that are at the downtown farmers market are basically a bunch of aging hippies for the most part. This is a bohemian section of town. It's kind of like Memphis's answer to Greenwich Village, and this is where all the hipsters, all the homosexuals, all the childless married couples, all the empty nesters, all the artsy-fartsy types that we have in Memphis, this is where they prefer to live. And those are the type of people that frequent the market, and they're also the, you know, the people that actually are the vendors at the market are cut from the same cloth as their customer base. So consequently, this is a perfect example of the truth of James's observation in his book, Racism, Smacism, that a racist is merely a synonym today for a white person. If these granola-munching hippies are racist, then tell me what white person isn't. This, of course, is the change that the left is trying to subtly bring to everybody's consciousness now. You know, this is what these whiteness studies people like Jane Elliott and Tim Wise preach when they are giving their little seminars, that all white people are the beneficiaries of white privilege. There are no exceptions to the rule. You know, and basically, if that's the case, then, you know, forget about trying to be liberal, forget about trying to be tolerant. You're just going to give the other side more ammunition to beat you with. They're going to take you down if you are allowed to do that. So don't play into their game. Don't fall for their trap. What you need to do is fight them, you know, at every juncture. If, you know, that, and they're never going to let the civil rights movement die, because if they let the civil rights movement die, what they're going to do is they're going to lose their trump card. This is the way that they always win arguments with conservatives. If you agree that somehow the civil rights movement is great and that everything that went past it is bad, then you've lost the argument. You've let the camel's nose in the tent.
Keith, that's a great commentary, but I got to tell you something, son. It didn't look good for Kong when I went in there. It's getting near the end of the movie. I saw him climbing up that fateful tower. And you know what happens.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing good happens to you if you go to New York City.
That's right, as Kong can attest. If anybody wants to catch the end of that movie, it's on TNT right now, at least in the Central Time Zone. But listen, don't miss our show for it. You can always rent it. At least you can't rent it at Blockbuster anymore. Blockbuster's out of business, but Keith says watch 1930s King Kong.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, hard to believe we're already at the bottom of the first hour of tonight's live broadcast. Only one more segment with Keith Alexander tonight, then two more hours forthcoming. Eddie the Bombardier Miller will be joining us in studio to provide some co-hosting assistance, although we do have no formal guest tonight. Yeah, he's loading up the Bombay doors right now. He'll be flying over to the studio any minute. Keith, we have another sad story to present to the audience tonight, something that we can file in the death by diversity category of our cabinet. Tell them about it. School started back this week, did it not?
Okay, this is another gem from the Memphis Commercial Appeal, also known to locals as a communist appeal. This one is the murder at the Memphis Junior Academy. Now, the Memphis Junior Academy was a segregation academy, and it, even though it was founded before the busing order came into effect in Memphis in 1973 and 1974, like every other private school in the Memphis area, it experienced a growth by leaps and bounds when the busing order came into effect. Basically, that's when the other shoe dropped in the Brown versus Board of Education decision. This is when the rubber really met the road, and they decreed that you could run, but you couldn't hide in the city of Memphis. Blacks were going to be bused to white schools. Whites were going to be bused to black schools. And if you didn't like that situation, that's tough. So just about every white church had a Sunday school building. It was transformed almost overnight into a segregation academy, a little school. And likewise, the existing private schools that were in existence at that time, they, you know, if they just experienced a threefold increase in their student body, then they weren't really participating fully in the situation. And that was what Memphis Junior Academy was. And the people that ran it knew what they were doing. They knew that it was going to be a disaster for white students to go to school in a majority black setting. And that's exactly what's happened to American public education generally. If you want to know why things are so bad now, why nobody wants to throw their kid into the black hole of Calcutta called the public schools of a place like Memphis or Detroit or any other city that has a sizable minority population, then you need to look at the Brown versus Board of Education decision and busing. Well, like the Scottish poet Robert Burns said, the best laid plans of mice and men oft go astray. And what caused them to go astray in the private schools of Memphis is infiltration of the faculties and the bureaucracy, the administration of those schools by the cultural Marxist left. You know, all of these teachers go to the same schools of education. They all get fed the same rot-gut liberalism. So it's not much of a surprise that they come out liberal, and the first thing they do is try to subvert the original intent of the founders of those schools. That's what happened at the Memphis Junior Academy. They got a headmaster or headmistress from the Pacific Northwest, where, you know, if you see a black person, you basically have to turn on the television set. They don't have them. And, of course, this is where we're supposed to be looking for a white homeland, according to some white nationalists, you know. But we get people like Suzette York, who came down here to do a little missionary work among the heathen whites down here in the sunny South, and to help lift the heavy yoke of racial oppression off the backs of all these minorities. And as a result, if you read the Memphis Junior Academy's mission statement, you will read how they are committed to multiculturalism and diversity. And believe me, they've got the bona fides to prove it. Even though the student body, like all private schools in Memphis, is majority white, they have as many minorities as they have scholarships to pay for. Now, they insist on being paid to let these people in, but if you give them any money, you're giving them money to provide scholarships to minorities. Well, what happened at the Memphis Junior Academy this past week is that this bleeding heart liberal headmistress was stabbed to death by one of these minority scholarship students, Eduardo. What is his name? Martimello? Yeah, right. Yeah, well, anyway, it ain't Smith. Believe me that. And this just goes to show that, you know, these liberals think that somehow they have an invisible shield and that everything's going to turn out right. And all they do is put themselves in harm's way. Like Amy Beale, the famous Jewish girl that went to South Africa and was killed by the blacks that she was so solicitous of ministering to. I remember during the Hurricane Katrina aftermath, they had some organizer for the Obama administration, white girl from San Francisco, go down there riding bikes through the black area of New Orleans, and she wound up mysteriously killed next to her bicycle with no explanation. There's been no solving of that crime, as far as I can tell, to this date. And it was probably just a hate crime. They saw a white girl who looked vulnerable, and they killed her. Now, none of the, you know, that liberals never learn. And, of course, the news media does everything they can to prevent them from learning the lesson. They don't connect the dots for you. In fact, they're now celebrating this Suzette York as being this wonderful example, this exemplar of the way we all ought to be. Well, if we all act like her, we're all going to be dead, James.
And this is certainly a tragic story. I mean, you don't want to see this kind of... Well, you don't want to see anybody die, you know, whether they're a liberal or whatever, you know, whatever ethnicity they may be. But at the same time, you can use your common sense and you'll probably be a lot better off in the long run. Although, I guess, you know, when you're a principal and you're setting in school, this happened in school, mind you, you probably are going to think you'll be pretty safe. But unfortunately, she wasn't. And the reason that, you know, this guy is technically a minor, obviously, Keith. He's 17 years old. The reason his name has been released, because in the state of Tennessee, the law provides that if you are arrested for first-degree murder, they can, the news media can release your name. But number one, you know, he's 17 years old. What was he doing? He's Hispanic. What was he doing at a school that only goes to the 11th grade anyway? I mean, obviously, he'd already been held back a year or two at the least. And secondly, with him being a minor, he murders his principal. Does he do 3 or 4 months in juvie and then he's set free at 18? Or what's the potential penalty for him there, Keith?
Well, he could serve as many as 51 years, but basically, yeah, as a minor. Well, not as a minor. They're going to try him as an adult. They'll have to get him tried as an adult. But he's already admitted that he was plotting this murder all year long. Now, Suzette York, apparently, her big-heartedness or soft-headedness extended to the point, you know, they'd never had an 11th grade before at the Memphis Junior Academy. She was extending it as a personal favor for this kid, trying to help him get through school. And what does he do? He plots her murder all summer long, gets her into a situation where he knows he'll be alone with her, and stabs her mercilessly numerous times until she's dead. Now, we've got to get people to wake up and smell the coffee. I don't like to see these type of things happening, but, you know, I think it's Michael Savage who says liberalism is a mental disorder. It obviously is when somebody like Suzette York basically serves herself up on a silver platter to a person that hates her guts and is a minority and has no remorse whatsoever about killing her, and she's the reason he's back at that school. She was going to extend the grade one level to the 11th grade, which had never been done there before, because she was so, you know, taken with him and trying to get him, you know, through school, and she was going to make a difference in this kid's life. It's really sad and it's really pathetic, but this is what happens when you have an overload of liberalism. And of course, rather than saying to the public what they should say, which is the truth, which is that this lady is a fool, and don't be a fool like this lady, the commercial appeal is lionizing her as being this great liberal heroine. Now, another reason why the commercial appeal is reporting this is because this unfortunate incident happened at a predominantly white private school. And the commercial appeal is secretly pleased whenever something bad happens at a predominantly white private school in Memphis. And, of course, virtually every private school in Memphis is a predominantly white private school. The Memphis public school system is over 85% black and less than 10% white. And that's because despite all these protestations of liberalism that you hear from the fashionable people like Nina Taylor, they always manage to somehow find a way to send their kids to these private schools because they know deep down in their hearts exactly what a disaster it would be if they attended the public schools with the minority population that they have in Memphis. Now, when are people going to tell the emperor he has no clothes? When are people going to tell the truth again? You know, this is like Stockholm syndrome. What's happening is, you know, it reminds me of the Aesop's fable where the woman found the frozen snake, picks it up, holds it to her breast, takes it inside to the house, warms it before the fireplace, and then it bites her and kills her. And she says, "Why could you do that to me?" And she says, "Because I'm a snake, silly woman." That should be the Suzette York lesson.
You know what? A lot of truth in fables, right, Keith? More fables from Keith and Aesop next week here on the Political Cesspool. But don't go anywhere. Just because Keith is done doesn't mean that I am. Two more hours tonight. I'll be back with you after the commercial break to steer you through them.
Jumping pews and shouting hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.